Alrighty then, and welcome to North Shore Sports Night on a Monday night. I think this is our first broadcast in September. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Welcome, Tim. I got that right, because last week was what, the first Monday?
Yes, Rick.
And that was Labor Day. Well, I'm confused because you got your Indy 500, you got your Kentucky Derby. Did they run the Indy 500? I don't remember seeing anything about it.
They did have some ads for it during that week, but that was it.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be in August or something. Now, what about the Kentucky Derby? Was that run?
Yep.
It was. Oh, okay. Yep. Oh, my God. So I've been out of the loop here. Indy 500. I'm Googling that now. All right. I'll explain who we got coming up here.
I have to ask Gary who the Q-Kits are.
Trying to say Celtics. He was trying to say Celtics.
Well, he didn't do a good job, so I'm going to ask him who the hell are the Q-Kits.
Well, it could be the... Could be the Q-tips. I mean, you know. So when I'm so confused by this. So they ran the Kentucky Derby.
Yep.
All right, and a horse won.
And a horse won it. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And apparently they ran the Indy 500 on August 23. Okay. That's pretty sad, man. Oh lordy. Okay. Well, you know what? When we go back and put this up online, I'll edit all that first 2 or 3 minutes out, so I don't look like the complete ding-dong that I am.
Well, give the people the real side. Come on.
Oh, lordy. I'm telling you. Talk about out of the loop. Well, getting back into the loop in high school, we're going to be talking with John Delanis tonight. He is the director of athletics at Masconomen High School, and as you know, Kaypan League is planning to play fall sports, and Masco is not in the Kaypan League anymore. So when the Northeastern Conference opted out of fall sports, there was a rally in Danvers a couple of weeks ago at Danvers Square that I attended, and Masconomen was really well represented with its student athletes, in particular the running teams, the cross-country teams. They were there. A lot of other schools were there too. I won't say a lot of other schools, but several other schools were there, including Danvers High School and Peabody High School. I believe Marblehead showed up and Beverly was represented. So a lot of schools from the Northeastern Conference did rally and say that we do want to play. And lo and behold, many schools have reversed the school committees, I should say, have reversed the decisions of the administrators in allowing the kids to go ahead and play some fall sports. Now, that includes Beverly, Swampscott, Danvers. No, Danvers is meeting tonight. I'm sorry. Peabody, Masconomen, and I'll have to see who else is in there. Gloucester's superintendent of schools, Ben Lummis, has recommended that the kids go ahead and be able to play, and the school committee, I think, will probably decide on that this week. And Danvers, as I said, is meeting tonight. So we're going to be talking with Athletic Director John Delanis about that from his point of view at Masconomen. We'll also be checking in with Lauren Riley Gove, who is the incredibly successful field hockey coach at Gloucester High School, former student of mine, former student of Tim's, and we'll check in with her. Gary Larrabee is going to be on board. Gary, hold on one sec. Gary wants to talk... We'll catch up with golf as we always do with Gary. He's a golf writer and sports historian. But he also wants to get into the Celtics, so he'll lead the way in for Mike Grenier later on. Mike will also be talking about the Celtics, and it's going to be a lot of fun. But, Coach, I want to talk to you about your impression of yesterday's games, meaning the Cam Newton's team and Tom Brady's team. What did you think about yesterday?
Well, it was a better start than I think a lot of people expected from Cam Newton. He looked a lot more in control of the offense than Tom Brady did, which is rather surprising because he was late coming on to the Patriots, and Tom Brady has been playing catch and working out with his receivers and a lot of the teammates from the moment that he signed with them, and they look really disjointed throughout most of that game till the very end when, the game was basically over. Expected more, but my wife is yelled at me because I'm not all hyped up about, you know, I want Tom Brady to do well. Well, Tom Brady is just, right now, he's another player in the league. He's another quarterback, and I don't get excited for other players of other teams. I get excited for my team. Well, I did so much, and I understand the passion. I understand a lot of the loyalty of people for Tom Brady and what he brought to the team, but he opted to leave the team. And so he left what he did behind, and now he's playing for another team. You wish him well. You hope he stays healthy, but I'm not going to follow his every move. I'm not going to watch every time that the Buccaneers are on the TV. No.
I think that's
he's another player on another team.
I think that's a difference.
It was interesting. And I said to my wife, when he ran in for that first touchdown, I said, he ran in for that touchdown because Cam Newton ran in for the first touchdown. You know, he wasn't going to be out. It seemed to me he wasn't going to be outdone by Cam on the opening drive.
Well, what I thought, several things. First of all, you echo my sentiments exactly. You know, we're old school sports fans, and old school sport fans are loyal to their teams. When someone leaves the team, you're still loyal to the team. That's the way I feel. Also, I hope Brady comes back in retirement and gets the celebration he deserves, and people can celebrate his accomplishments. But watching him yesterday, Tim, I got to tell you, it pained me a little bit to see him in that uniform to begin with. But it also pained me to see how he was playing. He was playing exactly the way he did in the last few games here in New England. And by that, I mean, when he's got time, he's bulletproof. He is on the money. But when he doesn't have time, he's got the happy feet now. And he got that penalty, you know, for forward pass there, you know, not a legal forward pass. You know what I'm trying to say here.
Intentionally grounding.
He got that. He threw the pick six, and then he started overthrowing receivers and so on. And it made me nervous. Like, that's not the Tom Brady that we know and love. He's still good. He's still, you know, one of the best quarterbacks in the league. Watching Cam Newton, what impressed me was that the Patriots offense built its offense, changed its offense to accommodate Newton's style of play, which is what they did for Brady. You know, back when Brady first started, which is what they did for Drew Bledsoe and so on and so on. And that's what obviously you got to do. But I think the thing, you know, Tim, I don't know if you saw it, but really, I loved it. On Newton's second touchdown, he gave the ball to David Andrews to spike. Did you see that?
Yeah. And he told him, you spike it.
That is cool. Yeah. I mean,
yeah. I think that really meant a lot to Andrews, would have meant a lot to the team that, you know, he came in with the reputation of being a real me kind of player.
Mm-hmm.
And for him to give the ball to Andrews, who was trailing him on that play, waiting for to give a block, and knowing that Andrews had been out the entire previous year, the first game back, that, you know, hey, we appreciate what you do. And it was amazing, Rick, how much more cohesive that offensive line was on day one with Andrews back at center.
Yeah. Excuse me. I agree. And I think I'm not going to get all that too excited because Miami is not a strong team and New Orleans is. And both Coach Peyton and the quarterback Breeze were saying they had terrible games yesterday and they still were able to beat Tampa Bay. So, you know, you got to put things in balance. But it was fun. It was fun to watch. And, you know, the other thing, Coach, is that I think the Patriots had one penalty, and that's with no preseason games. That's going right into the regular. And that was late in the game.
Well, they took three interference penalties on the defensive secondary that is supposed to be the strongest part of the team.
Well, that's right. Gilmore had a couple, yeah.
You know, you're going to get those. I think Jackson had two. Gilmore had one. And if you're going to be aggressive, every now and then you're going to get those. But I didn't see a fourth penalty. There were no offensive line penalties. You know, there were no defensive line penalties. There were no procedures. There were no offside. And last year, that was a real ballywick for the,
I know,
for the Patriots. I mean, they killed themselves with penalties. They keep the opponent's drives going. You know, and it was so frustrating to the fans who expected a bit more discipline. But they was just, last year, they were such a piecemeal team, with guys being injured. And this year, you got everybody back, everybody on the same page, which really means you got to send a lot of credit to Belichick and the staff that saw turnovers.
Absolutely.
How they managed to get that team of guys that cohesive for game number one.
With all the turnover, you're right, on offense and defense. Coach, we got to take a break. We'll come back with the director of athletics at Masconomet High School, John Delanis. This is MSO News Sports, and this is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be right back.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. John Delanis not available at this particular time. And Coach, what else is you taking a look at? I know that you are vehemently against kids going back to school and kids playing sports, but the fall sports season is going to get underway, fall one, I guess it's called, with adjusted soccer, adjusted field hockey, adjusted golf, and adjusted, what am I missing? Cross country.
Yeah, it's a pandemic. We don't know where these kids and their families are going when they're not together, you know, not with their teammates. A coach is going to be able to make sure that every teammate standing on that sideline keeps the masks on, doesn't, you know, interact with other people. I just have the fear, Rick, you know, and I ran into a former colleague at Market Basket tonight in Gloucester, and we talked, and we both did the same thing. People aren't taking this seriously. People want to look beyond it. Yeah, Gloucester's numbers are low, okay. Some of these cities and towns are low. It only takes one person to become a super spreader, and then everything gets shut down, and then you got to rearrange schedules depending upon games played and results. Do you wipe out the fall one that everybody wants to play? You know, we've seen two local high schools, Dedham, Newton North, and Lincoln Sudbury, have now gone totally remote because kids have had parties and the administrations have found out about them and they've canceled the hybrid and they're going totally remote.
Okay, so, all right. Well, we'll, you know, I get that. And, you know, as I said before, I'm glad I'm not teaching anymore right now, and I'm glad I don't have kids in high school anymore. But we are going to be talking with the coaches, and we're going to be covering these teams here very soon, and we'll see what happens and how long this thing can go and see what the result will be. I want to take another quick break, Coach, just to see if I can reconnect with John Delanis. So we'll take another break, and then we'll be right back. And if that doesn't work, we'll be checking in with Lauren Riley Gove, who's the field hockey coach over at Gloucester High School. So hang in there. We'll be back.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, KPNSavings.bank.
Member FDIC. Member DIF. Equal housing lender.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Blue Collar Lobster at the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, is open daily from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. for takeout, outdoor dining, or inside table service at the Cafe Seven Seas. Blue Collar Lobster offers high-top tables with umbrellas, a tented area with tables and chairs, a canopy area with picnic tables, and seating in the open-air portion of Cafe Seven Seas, all with a view of the working harbor. Full bar service is available, and bartenders are ready to make you a delicious cocktail. Enjoy the food and the view, and stay as long as you like at Blue Collar Lobster, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. To view the Blue Collar Lobster menu, visit thegloucesterhouse.com. All right, you guys, okay, here we go. We're back. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. This is North Shore Sports Night on this Monday night. We're bringing in now the Gloucester High School field hockey coach, Lauren Riley Gove. And, Coach, welcome back to MSO. I got to ask you, how long you been the head coach now?
This is my eighth season coming on. I had a couple years on sub-varsity prior to that, but this is season eight.
Good Lord. Man, that went by fast.
Did
you get a chance to talk to your kids in the springtime, you know, that you had last fall? Because I'm sure some of them were multi-sport athletes and they did not get to participate. But even more so, the seniors did not get to do their normal senior activities heading off to whatever endeavors they might be going. So how was it in May and June and July?
I think you're asking from the perspective of the kids that graduated?
Pretty much, yeah, and, you know, your relationship with them and how they miss so many things.
They were certainly disappointed. You know, I think that the entire state of the world kind of put things into perspective for them. We had a lot of good kids that had some great heads on their shoulders. So they were certainly disappointed in the things that they missed out on, but, you know, respectively speaking, it wasn't the end of the world.
Well, that's cool. I mean, I found that most of the kids were pretty resilient as well, the ones that we talked to. But, you know, we really feel bad for them. And now you go into this season, and it's all topsy-turvy as well with the beginning of school coming up. What's the status now, Coach? Because I know that the several schools in the conference, I think five or six schools, have opted to go ahead and play a Fall 1 schedule the conference. So I guess it's Masconomet, Beverly, I want to say Marblehead, Swampscott, Peabody. Now, Danvers is meeting tonight, and Gloucester, your superintendent has recommended that the kids be allowed to play. So what's the status of Gloucester field hockey at the moment?
Gloucester field hockey at the moment is chomping at the bit to get out there and participate. We have been doing some off-season non-sport related conditioning. So that has been great because we've had a connection with those girls. But we're just kind of waiting in limbo for the decision. Mm-hmm. If they say yes, you know, we can go ahead and start training with them. We can start training with them on Friday, no matter what the decision is. But we certainly are hoping for a yes vote so that we can participate. You know, if we were to be push to fall two, is what they're calling it, in February. I mean, besides battling the elements, we really wouldn't be having too much competition if the other teams are playing now. So, you know, that's certainly one of those things that you have to think about if everyone in your comp, because you can't schedule interleague games. So, you know.
Yeah, I know. I know one of the schools, I forget who I was talking to, but they've got the partial schedule, and they're like a KPN League school, and then they're going to fill it in with out-of-league games. The thing is, and I want to talk about some of your kids you have, you know, expect to play this season, Lauren, but the idea, I mean, what's your philosophy now? I mean, you've been coaching for a while. No one's ever experienced anything like this. I talked with Fernando Braz, the incredible Peabody cross-country and track coach over at Peabody High School, and his thing was, we just want to compete. We want to compete. And knowing that, you know, it's not going to be a normal Northeastern Conference championship, it's not going to be a normal MIAA playoff season, but the kids want to compete. And as a competitor yourself, coming from an incredibly competitive coaching family, an athletic family, what's your philosophy on this, Lauren? How are you looking at this? How do you plan to play, to coach this thing?
Well, my philosophy with the girls has always been, you know, it's great to win the conference, which we did a couple years in a row. And then last year, for example, we started off a little bit slow. We had some setbacks in our roster. And, you know, I always say to the girls, the conference is great. The regular season is fantastic, but we're looking towards postseason. You know, we had a very set goal of getting to and winning a state championship. That's always been our goal. And, you know, now obviously we have totally switched gears on that. And it's just, okay, listen, if we get the opportunity, we go out there and we play as hard as we can. You go out, you look to be successful in every single game that you play. We had a tournament this last July, I think. It was in August.
Mm-hmm.
We played at Fenwick with all the other conference teams, and we did fantastic.
Okay. Well, that's the thing. You could, yeah, and I know some schools are talking about, you know, at the end of, if they get to play in Fall 1, they're going to form their own tournament and have their own championship and so on. And I guess that makes sense. Lauren, tell me about some of the kids you expect to lead the way. Let's say if this season gets underway and we have a normal, a semi-normal schedule, who are the kids we should be looking at?
Well, my captains, I have four captains, senior leadership that across the board are just fantastic. Of course, you have Mia Sala, who has broken records left and right, and she is just, you know, unstoppable on the forward line. Ella Marshall is tremendous. Ella may be one of the overall best athletes I've ever coached, hands down, but to even go to the high school, I mean, the kid is phenomenal. She has a know-how, she has a killer instinct, she's just all over the field and gives it all when she's out there. So I think the combination of her and Mia working together is going to be fantastic. And then I have the leadership part from Kelsey Lothers, who kind of, in this tournament, I watched her pick up right where we left off last year in the state tournament, which is, you know, that's what you're always looking for. And then my goalie, Mia Wheeler, she was looking tremendous at the end of the season last year and did a ton of work in the off season, and so they're looking great. And I have a team that has been there. You know, we did lose a couple of key players last year, but I have a solid team that's been to the tournament, that's played those big games, that knows how to step up. So we're looking to kind of capitalize on that know-how.
Mm-hmm. Coach, any questions for Coach?
That was great to see you last week, Lauren.
Always a pleasure.
A little subtext there, Tim.
Yes.
All right, be nice.
I know, I love Lauren. She's one of my all-time favorite students. Her and a little gang in the back of the room there.
Not much.
What kind of protective measures are you guys talking about putting in place? Because there is still the health risk.
Yes, there certainly is. I think that what we have going for us is the fact that we would be playing outdoors, and it's, you know, I try not to get too much into the, well, first of all, I don't think that there are really any facts that have come out too much surrounding the coronavirus. It's all kind of still up in the air, questionable things. I think that, you know, the statement from the WHO saying that it's very rare to transmit it from asymptomatic people kind of helps, where you would be able to gauge if people had symptoms of it and kind of hopefully smart about that. Of course, the MIAA has applied the mask rule, and they've dropped us down to 7 versus 7 with field hockey, which, you know, a lot of the coaches had gotten together, and there was actually a petition that was put in place to re-amend that, because, you know, in field hockey, there really isn't too much gathering on the ball. You may have a couple of people that are going for it, but it's not really on top of each other. I don't believe that passed, so it would be the 7 versus 7. And then as far as transportation goes, you know, I feel that although there are risks that are out there, this isn't something that's just wafting from person to person. You know, there's certainly biology has to come into play, where you have to expel the virus, and then the virus then has to be picked up from somebody and ingested. So I think that what we've been doing really well in Massachusetts has been being aware of what to do and what not to do, and so far we have been very lucky. You know, I work in the restaurant industry, and of course we are a tourist town down here in Gloucester, and I think that it was a really great thing to see that our numbers stayed relatively low, well, extremely low, throughout the summer, even though we did have an influx of tourists. And working in the industry, I see how there were restrictions and, you know, put in place so that people were careful. So I do feel comfortable moving forward that if we do pay attention and we are on top of things, that we can really hopefully keep that at bay.
Coach, we know, you know, we love you. You know we're going to be talking with you, and we know that you're going to do the best for your kids. So we appreciate your taking the time tonight.
That's what it's all about, is it's all for the kids. It's keeping them active. It's keeping them engaged and just doing whatever we can. If we don't have a season, we will be practicing as much as we can. We will be with them. We will be on top of things. We will be supporting them. So hopefully we just get to compete and prove ourselves like we always try to.
And you'll be constantly teaching. Coach Gove, thank you very much. We'll talk to you soon. I'll see you on the field if this thing actually gets underway.
For sure. I appreciate it, guys. You guys take care.
Thank you, Coach. All right. That is Coach Lauren Riley Gove, who is the field hockey coach at Gloucester High School. We will take a break and come back with Gary Larrabee, talk a little golf and probably a little more basketball here on MSO, of all things, because you get your Celtics to talk about here, and they've been fun to watch. So we'll be right back. This is North Shore Sports Night.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
All right, we're back with Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer. And Gary, welcome back. We missed last week. We've missed some big golf stuff and so much stuff going. Actually, good stuff going on in the world of sports. So where do you want to start?
We should probably start by getting a few ideas shared with me and Tim about this week's big event, the U.S. Open, down there at Wayne DeFoot in Mamaroneck, New Jersey, one of Tim's old haunts. What do you think of this week's U.S. Open, Tim? What do you like?
Who do I like? You got to go to the mid with the hot game. You got to go Dustin Johnson. I'm sorry, you know. He's just playing so strong, and he's been able to hold off the competition, you know. And he's playing without fear. As a veteran, he shouldn't be, and he's not rattled. As with as much experience as he has, he shouldn't be. But he's displaying all those traits of a guy who is at the pinnacle, probably many would think, of his career, and he's just letting the money ride.
Those are all good reasons why he might be a choice. But Tim, he's already played fabulous golf for three consecutive weeks, and we haven't seen anybody play like that since someone named Tiger was at his peak.
Yep.
But for him to do it for another week, which would be the fourth week in a row that he's competed against all of his contemporaries, I don't think it's a, I think it's a long shot.
Well, if that's the case, then I would have to go Justin Thomas, because I look back at the final match of the FedEx Cup, and if it wasn't for the points or the strokes that were given to each golfer, Justin Thomas would have won that match.
That's right. He did win them. He did win that four-day tournament. He simply didn't win because of the lead that Dustin Johnson had earned by leading the FedEx Cup. Anyways, those are two very obvious choices, Tim. I'm going to go with a very non-obvious choice, and he's been very quiet since he won the PGA Championship, but I am predicting that Colin Morikawa,
yep,
from California, is going to win the second straight major of 2020. And he has not played particularly well since he won the PGA out in California. But watch out for Colin Morikawa this week, guys. And after that, it's Pick'em, and it could be a wide-open game because of the difficulty of the golf course. So it is a lot to look forward to this week at Wingfoot.
Yeah, Gary, you know, when I heard the points that I don't recall, maybe because I wasn't paying as much attention to it, but the points that were awarded to each of the golfers going into that final match of the FedEx Cup, Johnson got 10 strokes, and I think Thomas had 7 strokes, and he just couldn't overcome that difference.
Well, those conditions are established long in advance in consultation between the tournament policy board and the players. And if you're complaining about the format, Tim, and claiming that your boy Thomas got screwed, I think it's old news. We'll have to see how things shake down between now and next year's FedEx Cup playoffs. But for the moment, this should be a very exciting week. Unfortunately, our favorite local PGA Tour player, Rob Oppenheim, will not be competing. He did have a pretty good weekend playing out in the West Coast at the Safeway Open. They wrapped up yesterday. He finished at 12 under par and still finished a million miles behind the winner. He did make $30,000, though, and gives him something to feed off of for not this week, since he's not playing. You know, this is a strictly invitational U.S. Open based on performance, both for amateurs and all the big-name pros, because they didn't have any opportunity because of the pandemic to have any of those infamous U.S. Open qualifying rounds, either local or sectional. So it's a different format this year. And let's get this thing rolling, guys. The weather looks good from metropolitan New York this weekend. So I'm looking forward to watching a lot of great golf and watching my buddy Colin Morikawa win another major.
I like him too. I was kind of surprised at how he wasn't even in the discussion on that last day. He was rather far back. Going back to Rob for a moment. Day three killed him. He shot a 73 after going 68, 66 and being right near the top of the leaderboard.
Yeah, well, that's past history, and it's a fresh day, Tim, and I just think we could see some very unique history this week at the Open. I do not think Tiger Woods will be a factor, but we've been surprised by Tiger many times before. He doesn't seem to have the form that he's had, and he had pretty good form last in the spring, I should say, when he won his 15th major at the Masters. And of course, we have another Masters. I'm talking a year and a half ago when he won the Masters. And of course, he'll be defending his championship at this year's Masters in December. But let's see what he does this week. He didn't play. He played horribly at the PGA. We'll see how he does with this one.
All right, let's
looking the hours.
Let's switch gears, Gary, because Mike Grenier's waiting in the wings. And you guys covered a lot of the same stuff at the Salem News, and you keep up with everything. And one of the great stories right now from the bubble is the way the Celtics are playing. And we're going to talk with Mike exclusively about that in terms of what we're going to cover with him. So what's your take on these guys?
Well, I think they show an awful lot of what they're made of in that Game 7 after really blowing Game 6, losing in double overtime, and blowing the Game 3. They have shown to be quite resilient, and I expect them to win this series if they can keep Jimmy Butler from scoring 55 points a game, although they are a fantastic long-distance shooting team. But what the Celtics have going for them, guys, that I don't think we've talked about so much, is the fact that they have the nerves. They've got the nerves, and the fact they won that Game 7 after not scoring a field goal in the last 5 minutes. And Jason Tatum grew up a tremendous amount in that series. I like the Celtics' chances. Of course, the Celtics, their primary offensive weapon is the one-on-one strategy. They play an awful lot of one-on-one basketball at the offensive end. If Miami lets them play that way, one-on-one, they have a great chance to win that series. And thank goodness we have Marcus Smart, Tim, playing for the Celtics.
Well, he was criticized for, at the beginning of that series, of not being the Marcus Smart of recent vintage. And all of a sudden, he comes up and he throws in 7 or 8 threes in the very next game. It's like, okay, let's criticize him a little bit more and see what we can get.
Yeah, there you go. That's not a good idea.
And he's a tremendous defensive player, but thanks for the question, Rick, and lots more exciting conversation, I'm sure, coming up after me with Mike Grenier.
Well, if I had the capability, we'd bring in Mike now. I don't have that capability to bring on a third person, because that would be way cool. Final question to you, Gary. Talk a little bit about what you got coming up in the Salem News this week.
Well, we're going to be talking about a local golfing entrepreneur who has secured the services of Sir Nick Faldo to help him market and sell a very unique golf shoe. But it's Bob Winskowitz from Danvers and from Georgetown, and we'll be writing about Bob Winskowitz's latest venture that also is part of Sir Nick Faldo's venture.
Looks good. All right, look forward to that. Look forward to the Celts tomorrow night and the U.S. Open. We'll follow. We'll talk to you next Monday.
Thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Thank you, Gary. That's Gary. Gary Larrabee, sports historian and golf writer here on MSO, talking a little basketball as well. We're going to take another here quick break and then check in with Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night. We'll be back.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
What a hand lumper. We measure up.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Alrighty, we're back with Mike Renier, sports writer, sports reporter, and all-around pretty decent guy who wears a lot of Notre Dame hats. Mike, how you doing?
Yes, not bad, not bad. And I know that obviously we're going to talk about the Celtics and Miami Heat, and wouldn't it be nice to put the hurt on Miami just a couple days after the Patriots put the hurt on the Miami Dolphins?
Well, I thought we were going to leave with Notre Dame, but yeah, you know, I got it, Mike. When Marcus Smart, Gary just talked with Tim about Marcus Smart.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to you about that two weeks ago, and I said, you know, he's like a hand grenade that's rolling on the floor. When is he going to explode?
Right.
Well, damn if he didn't explode in that game with the three-pointers. But his defense, which we all have admired, he just comes up with the big play time after time.
I tell you, you couldn't be more correct, Rick, and I'm sure Tim would also agree. I thought in game six, the double overtime game, I thought he was the best player in the game. He had a triple-double, 20-something points, 11 rebounds, 10 assists. Unfortunately, it came in a loss. Otherwise, that game would be immortalized because it would have been the closing game had the Celtics won it. And I thought it was perhaps the best all-around game of his career. But to point out to what you said, too, in game seven, with less than a minute left, he comes up with that block shot while backpedaling, against Powell, and it just kind of, it didn't quite secure the game, but it made the Celtics' chances that much better, obviously, in the final minute of Game 7. Wow. It was a very, very tense Game 7. But overall, I thought the Celtics had a better team in that series, and I think the deserving team moved on to the Eastern Conference Finals here.
Before we get into specifics, Mike, and you and Tim hash this thing out, too, what would it mean if Gordon Hayward comes back to the chemistry of the way they're playing right now?
I think it would mean a lot, but I also think I'm glad you mentioned him because I think he's the mystery player in this entire series because we don't know the health status. I know that he's welcome back to the bubble right now, and he did some working out the last couple of days, and Brad Stevens is being very cautiously optimistic, with the operative word being cautious. I don't think they would actually, if he came back and was declared, okay, ready to go, I don't know if they would put him into the starting lineup because of this injury, and he's been out for a month now. So I think they would actually, my guess is they would actually go with Marcus Smart because he's been playing so well, and bring Hayward in as the sixth man as a scoring option. I don't know how Tim thinks about that, but that seems to be my theory at this point. I think that Gordon Hayward would certainly be welcome, his scoring would be welcome, but he might have to do it off the bench.
Well, you know, I definitely agree. You know, I heard on the radio today that he didn't practice, but he had a hard workout off to the side or after the game, and he came right through that okay. But he was not going to play tonight. So obviously, you're right. The caution is there in terms of bringing him back when he's fully ready. Not putting the pressure on him, having to go out there and produce right away as a starter, but let him come off the bench, let him ease into the flow of the game and let the offense come to him. You know he can score. You know he can go inside. He can hit it outside. And just let him play through the transition game.
Yeah, no, I agree. You're right about not having any pressure on him. But I also think that Miami is so good, Tim, have we seen that they will need some scoring from Gordon Hayward, even if it is off the bench, because you know, this team is actually better than the two teams the Celtics have already beaten. And no one's been talking about them. Like, you know, I just mentioned before we went on air to Rick that who would have thought that the Celtics being a 3 seed, Miami being a number 5 seed, would end up in the Eastern Conference Finals. Both teams have been somewhat surprising. Miami probably more so because they were a lower seed going into this whole tournament, and they were 8-1 in the playoffs. So they have played great basketball. And you look at their team, and they have some depth to go with that starting five. And, you know, we should mention a local angle for the Miami Heat. Duncan Robinson, who's one of the best three-point shooters in the league, played his high school ball at, it used to be Governor Dummer's outside Dummer's Academy outside of Newburyport. And then he goes to a Division III, and then he played at Phillips Exeter Academy, right, for a year, post-grad. And then he goes to Division III Williams College, where no way, if you're playing at Division III ball, you're buried as far as the NBA is concerned. But he transfers to Michigan, has himself enough of a career to end up in the NBA. What a great story. He's in. Of course, we don't want him to be a great player against the Celtics.
That is so true. And you know, timing is everything. Being in the right place at the right time is everything as well. And certainly, you know, for both the Celtics and for Miami, right place, right time, coming together, getting hot, all the pieces working, coaches not doing stupid things, and right. You manage to, pull the upsets along the way.
Yeah, I really think the Celtics fans, if they haven't seen Miami up close this year, they're going to be surprised at how good they really are. I mean, they have a tall, rangy, athletic guy in Bam Adebayo at the five spot, at the center spot, who will give Tice all sorts of problems simply because he's taller than Tice, and he can score that little mid-range jumper, and he can rebound like crazy. And to me, one of the most surprising players on that team, Tim, is Goran Dragic, the point guard. He's averaging 22 points a game, almost 20. He's 34 years old, left-handed shooter, probably having the best stretch of his career that I've ever seen. I've always liked him as a player, but he's playing fantastic. And then we mentioned Duncan Robinson and, of course, Jimmy Butler, who could be pivotal in this series because he has superstar potential similar to Jason Tatum of the Celtics. So I think we're in for a long series, guys. Either way, I can see this one going out to seven games.
Yeah, you can see that too, because I think both teams at this point, Mike, are playing with house money.
Yep.
Nobody expected them to be there.
Yep.
They just have to maintain the composure that they've displayed so far in the playoffs. And I think the biggest thing for Dragic is he's letting his offense come to him.
Yeah.
Again, you get to that age, it's like, I got to keep playing hard. I got to just throw up shots, keep myself on the floor. He's just playing through the momentum of the game. I got a shot. I'm going to take the shot. And that comes from that inner calm of, I've been here before. I know how to do this. I don't need to force it. And so everything slows down.
Yeah, I agree. And he blends in. He meshes well with his teammates. And he's just been playing excellent ball. They just have an overall outstanding, unselfish team. I've really been impressed with them in the playoffs. And, of course, while being impressed with them, I'm also impressed with the Celtics. They've been able to get by the higher seed, Toronto, a number two seed. A lot of people thought they'd be going back to the Eastern Conference Final, but the Celtics were able to knock them off. But before we go any further, Tim and Rick, we should talk about Kemba Walker, because he was certainly befuddled in the latter part of the series against Toronto. Rick Nurse and the Toronto Raptors put on a box and one defense, and he wasn't quite sure how to handle that for a veteran player. I was a little bit surprised. He did sacrifice some offense, but he also didn't shoot the ball very well in the last two or three games of the series. That's going to have to change if the Celtics are going to have success against Miami. Kemba Walker has to return to form as a big, major, major part of the offense. He's only shooting like 29% on threes in the playoffs, and that's not like him. He needs to up that percentage if the Celtics are going to be competitive against the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals.
It's funny. Well, it's funny to come this far in talking with you, and you've only mentioned Jason Tatum once, and I think Tim did, and Kemba Walker, yes. But I think, Mike, you hit on a key note here, and you've mentioned it a couple of times, is team. You talked about Miami, team. You talked about Boston, team. And it wasn't that long ago when all the ding-dongs in Boston radio were talking about, you got to have three superstars.
Right.
The Celtics probably do have three superstars, but they've got much more than that, and as you've mentioned, so does Miami, and, Tice, the way he's been playing, the way the bench has been playing, and they don't have Gordon Hayward, and, as you say, they sort of, I don't want to say they've been carrying Kemba, but they need Kemba to do more. The concept of team has been so much fun for me as a fan to watch in these playoffs.
Well, you could tell the Celtics are a tight unit, because if we watched Game 7, which was a tense, very intense and tension-filled game at the end of Game 7 when Grant Williams, the rookie was fouled late in the game, and he missed two free throws with like 40 seconds
right.
in the game.
Right.
And, of course, Tatum came up with that great offensive rebound. I don't know if you heard the quote from Grant Williams after the game. He said to Tatum, "Thanks, JT, for saving my career in Boston."
No.
You know, I think that just speaks volumes about how tight a unit these guys are and how much fun they're having, not being like a number one seed and just emerging, you know, and being in the finals now against a similar team in Miami. And to me, it's a great series, a lot of storylines, a lot of superlatives can be dished out with these sort of underdog players from both teams. And not only that, guys, and Tim, I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but Celtics general manager Danny Ainge absolutely detests Miami president Pat Riley, and it's vice versa. They can't stand each other.
Good.
This has been going on
yep.
since Riley was coaching the Lakers in the 1980s, and Ainge, of course, was a pesky player for the Celtics and a real, you know, kind of a nerd and got in everybody's face. And it carried over to the point where, I guess, you know, at some point, Ainge criticized, you know, LeBron James, who was playing for, you know, under Riley's tutelage there in Miami, and Ainge criticized LeBron, and Riley came back with some expletive deleted against Danny Ainge, and Ainge's response was, you know, he can say what he wants about me. I don't want to mess up his Armani suits and the goop in his hair. Now, if that doesn't fire you up, and that is real trash talking from courtside, you know, from the guys wearing the suits. So if those guys hate each other, hopefully there'll be a little bit of animosity in this series. Although I think basically, there's no hateable guys on either team. I think, you know, you're going to have some really a good drawn-out series with some real competitive games. You know, if I had to pick a winner, I don't know, maybe I could get you guys on the spot too. I'm going to go with the Celtics in seven. I think it's going to be another long series. So I'm going to go with the Celtics in seven. What about you, Rick and Tim?
Oh, that's not fair. Well, it has to be different. Can see it going. I'm going to go Celtics in six.
Okay.
Because I think this is where Kemba Walker sort of emerges. I think rather than staying outside, I think he's going to spend a whole lot more time going to the hoop and creating dish-off opportunities, if not just taking it in himself. And I think that's going to probably set Miami up. They'll probably try to double-team him on the outside, maybe, like you said, go to the box in one. And I think Brad's going to come up and go, okay, they go box in one, we're just going to run you off picks all day long and just send you into that opening.
Right, exactly. You know? And I think Kemba figured it out a little bit in the second half of Game 7. I think he got like 10 points in the second half of Game 7, which was very crucial. Brad Stevens, this will be a chess match. Spoelstra's a very good coach. Brad Stevens is a very good coach. And they have to find a way to Kemba Walker to be, you know, for both Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to be more effective, then Kemba has to be a true threat. Otherwise, the Miami defense is going to focus totally on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown. And, of course, and Marcus Smart, we have, you know, he's come on board here as a stronger offensive force in these playoffs. So Miami's going to have to contend with him as well. I just think it shapes up as a great series. Far more, I think, interesting than whoever the Lakers end up playing.
I'm going to stick with my philosophy and Bill Newell's philosophy. We don't pick them because I don't know anything about Miami, but I sure as hell hope the Celtics beat them in six or seven. It would be so cool to see them go and get to the finals. My final question for you, Mike, is, and you just touched on it, is how important is the coaching and maybe the assessment of the two coaches and how they've done things? Because again, it wasn't that long ago when LeBron James was playing a one man game, winning championships, and people were talking about coaches that they're just not that important in the NBA.
Right. Well, no, that's what you just said. I think illustrates best what Eric Spoelstra does. Everyone thought that basically, you know, LeBron James was running the show when he was with Miami, but this season, you know, basically encapsulates how much Eric Spoelstra is an influence, because they are very much like the Celtics, a team. Jimmy Butler can be considered a superstar, but Butler kind of subjugates himself, much like Jason Tatum does. He can take over a game at any point and score 30-35, but there have been some winning games in these playoffs for the Miami Heat where Jimmy Butler has only contributed 10 points, 14 points, 16 points, because he involves his teammates. And you know, we know that Jason Tatum could do the same thing. Kemba Walker could do the same thing. So, Yeah, I believe that both Spoelstra and Brad Stevens have gotten the most out of the talent on those teams. And, you know, if they didn't, they wouldn't be the seeded as low as they were and yet come out into the finals here. So the coaching's had a major role in this, both teams' success here. So I think it's going to be a great chess match. I'm looking forward to every game, and I know we have a 6:30 p.m. start on Tuesday, which is great. After that, who knows if we're looking at 9 p.m. games, but I think we're in for a great series.
Yeah, I actually stayed up and watched the whole thing the other night until midnight. That's just not like me. Tim, final words with Mike?
Well, you know, I didn't get to make the comment in, but, you know, we talked a little bit about Tatum, and as I watch him play and I watch his demeanor on the court, is how mature he is.
Yep.
You know, he doesn't play like a kid. He makes an incredible shot. It's down the court. You know, he's not jumping. He's not animated. It's part of what I'm doing. It's part of what I'm supposed to do. You know, and he has such an inner confidence in himself. You can see it. But and he doesn't have to project to show you that he's that way.
Right. And you know what? Maturing, you use that word, Tim, and that's exactly the word I was using. He's so much better this year in the playoffs, more mature, the way he approaches every game, than he was even early. He's only in his third year. He's only 22 years old. And if you saw, I saw a great post-game quote last couple days from Jason Tatum. Says, I would love to win a championship so I can be loved in Boston. I think he's projecting that to mean like Larry Bird was loved, like John Havlicek was loved, like Bill Russell was loved by the fans. He wants to be, I think, up in the rafters someday, and he knows this is an opportunity to climb that ladder. So we'll see what happens, but Tatum's in a good place. I think the Celtics are in a good place, and let's hope Hayward can come back and contribute. Otherwise, let's just bring it on.
And Mike, let's hope we're all in a good place to stay safe here, watch these games, and things to get better here in this country.
Oh yeah, well, I'm all for that too, of course, guys.
Appreciate it, Mike. We'll talk next Monday night.
That sounds great.
Awesome. Thank you so much, brother. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Good night to you guys. Yeah, to both of you. Good night.
Talk to you later. Okay. That takes care of it for tonight. Appreciate our guests. Sorry we did not make connections with John Delanis, but we'll try again next week. Tim, any final thoughts?
No.
Okay. A man of few words. That's pretty cool.
I've used them all up.
Yeah, me too. And me too. And it was fun. It's good to talk. You know, when things are going right, it's good. We had a good week. And here we are with 1 minute left before the hour is up, and we did not mention the unmentionables who are playing at Fenway. So there you go.
We don't need to.
I agree. All right, Tim, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
All righty, Rick. Take care.
Thank you, Coach. Take care. That
bye-bye.
Is it. Bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who is our MSO super analyst and also our ambassador of goodwill. I'm Rick Moore, speaking for Bill Newell and Bill Proposky, who is our producer and engineer on this Monday night. Please spread the word that we're here at MSO News Sports, and you can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. We're going to be covering as much high school sports as we're allowed to cover, and as many high school sports as there are to cover. So we hope to be getting into that in a week or two, talking with more coaches and getting more videos and interviews up there with both the coaches and the kids. And needless to say, we are hoping and praying for a very successful fall school season, both academically and athletically, for all of the kids here that we know and all the kids who are going back to school everywhere. It's just a weird time. So thank you for being with us. That'll take care of it for this evening. I am Rick Moore. This is North Shore Sports Night, and this is MSONewsSports.com.